now, our feature presentation.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Florida Sound Archive Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Kaiser, and for today's episode, I have on a very special guest with me. Let's welcome in from the band Powerhouse out of Miami, Florida, Tim Price. Welcome on, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
It is good to have you on.
Good to join your library of cool people.
So you know a lot of people that have been on the podcast over the years. I know we were talking before we started recording about Rabbi Larry and your time in checking out that episode. So what did you think of that episode?
It was good. It was good. I listened to the whole thing. Yeah, I watched it. And I mean, you know, of course, the one with Tony and Chad was great. And you had Pete Gordon on. That guy's cool. I remember him from back. And Russell, that was cool. Jason won, of course. That was great. Yeah, there's a bunch. I was surprised. Like, looking through when I was like, because I found you a while back, you know, like found the channel and everything. And then when I went and looked even more, I was like, well, I missed that. That's pretty cool. There's some people. Yeah, some people that I know. Damien, that was cool. So, yeah, that's pretty neat. It's kind of a nice group. And I'm sure it'll grow and there'll be more people on it. That I have a past with.
I don't think there's any end in sight right now. So it's good to have you a part and to tell your story. So let's get started with that. And let's go in back to the early period and kind of those early years for you. So where'd you grow up?
My family moved us from New York when I was a tiny kid. So North Miami was there for probably until I was a teenager. North Miami Beach.
Did you go to high school there?
North Miami for like elementary school and junior high. And then I went to North Miami Beach senior. That's where he went to that same high school. So that's where I met a bunch of other people that I'd only known from going to shows. It's like, oh, now they're in the high school.
So I imagine you always go to shows, right? So when did that first start for you?
I was pretty young. Skateboarding came first, like most people from that era. Tim finds a skateboard at 13 and there you go. And then, of course, the usual suspects, Black Flag and Suicidal Tendencies and the Circle Jerks and Agnostic Front and all that stuff. And then, because I played guitar before that, because before that, I was like a rock and roller Van Halen kid and I wanted to play guitar. And I was like, oh, I could play Black Flag songs. That's kind of easier than playing Eddie Van Halen stuff. So, and then, yeah, it was easy for, I could easily kind of just play two chords on the thing, stop it, find it on the fretboard and just figure it out. And I was pretty good at doing stuff by ear. And then, it didn't take long before I was like, I'm not a good skateboarder, but I want to be in a band. Yeah.
How were you influenced by a lot of that music back then? Was it family, friends, other kids that you went to school with? How did that happen?
It's probably from skating because a couple of kids at school, a skateboard, you find out there's a ramp, you go there, there's older kids there, whatever. This one kid, John, who lived right around the corner. Just me and my friend Scott got into it first. Got our first skateboards together, first funny haircuts together. And started to see it from just, you know, you'd look at Thrasher or Transworld and you'd see some punk rockety stuff in there. And then John skateboarded too, and he lived around the corner from me. And his brother was older, had a record collection. And that was that. Oh, Minor Threat. Cool, like all of these things. And he was nice enough to borrow stuff or make tapes for us or whatever. You know, so he wasn't that much. He was, 2-3 years older. So there you go. And then just meeting people. I'm lucky where I met people pretty easily. Like I'd go somewhere and just end up making friends. And then finally, I wasn't too scared to go to shows anymore. It's like 14 when I started going to shows.
That's pretty young.
85, 86.
Did your parents know what you were doing at that age?
Yeah, my parents didn't do shit. Yeah, they weren't. They didn't. They didn't like forbid anything like that. You know, not the kind of household that I. So,
how'd you get there? Did you know people who drove? Was it walking distance or what?
Well, at first, I guess you know who Dean Lucas is. He was a popular skateboarder back then, and he was a good friend of mine. He had a car, and a couple people would have cars, but actually I used to catch the bus a lot. Are you familiar with North Miami Beach?
I went to school in North Miami at Johnson & Wales.
Take the bus from 163rd Street Mall down to 79th Street, catch another bus, get down to the beach, get down to the Cameo Theater. It's weird to think of the stuff we did.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, yeah, you don't see 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds doing that anymore. Crazy. So, yeah, a lot of bus and a lot of just us trying to catch a ride. Me and whoever else is trying to catch a ride any way we could.
Did you ever go through a metal phase?
Not really. I mean, you mean metal like Metallica and Slayer and stuff
Metallica,
like that?
Yeah, Metallica, Slayer. That's
I like that stuff later on. But I mean, I was like 12 years old and liked, you know, and it was like, this was 1984, 85. So those bands weren't even really there yet. And I went straight from Van Halen, Motley Crue and stuff like that, right into Black Flag in 7 seconds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as soon as I fessed, it was, you know, it's like a lot of you, as soon as you get there, you're like, all right, this is where I am. This is what I do. This is how I feel. That's that.
Found your spot. So when did you first discover a local band from Florida?
I mean, I guess going to shows like even the Cameo Theater, those bigger shows like Rugged Edge would open, like they were local, but I never really knew them. It's like I can't even think about what they sounded like. I'm trying to think of the first local bands where I actually knew them. I guess through skateboarding, Chocolate Grasshopper, Not Dead Yet. Remember that? And then Bad Rep had the skinhead guys had that Bad Rep band.
Yeah.
They were around for a while because when Ivan and I first started a group, we were called Bad Influence. And I remember somebody going like, oh, there's Bad Influence, Bad Rep, all of these bad bands. So let me change the name. You know, but I didn't really, it took a while before then, you know, Quit and Violent Deed, like the bands that were like just getting started at the same time that we were. And the Believers, I think, had already been, you know, Stay had already, they started, I think, before we did, as Powerhouse anyways. Because I think those guys are like 1 year older than me, maybe 2 years older. And they lived in West Palm. And back then, we were going to see them eventually. But yeah, we just wanted to start a group. I mean, there were some other little punk groups and stuff like that. But it was weird because we didn't really still fit in with a bunch of them. There were no groups like in our neighborhood. You know, I've lived right in North Beach and I lived in North Miami Beach back then. There was 10 of us who were into it. You know, everyone else was up in Fort Lauderdale or down in South Florida. Just wiggled our way in there and started playing some shows.
You mentioned the Cameo, right? Which is infamous, right? Everyone who's from down there at this time, 80s, 90s, knows of the Cameo. Were there any other places you were going to see shows at that time?
That long ago? There would be like once in a while a one-off at a FBW or something like that. But as far as 85, 86, 87, wow, pretty for a while there. I can't really remember going anywhere else. There were so many shows, multiple a week. I mean, they were all there. I'm sure there were other shows maybe that people were doing in backyards and stuff that I just didn't know about. But I don't remember any venues for a while. Because Washington Square came later. And the Junkyard came later, and a Thrash Can. All of those came like a few years later. Right. So I can't really think of anywhere else. The Lincoln Theater, but that was short. I don't know how many shows there actually were there.
What about like a larger concert? Did you ever go to like the Sportatorium or places like that?
Not until I was older. Not until I was way older, and someone's like, "Ooh, got Iron Maiden tickets." So, all right, you know, I'll go, I guess. But yeah, I never went to concerts like that. Actually, there was one at the Orange Bowl.
Okay, who was
like
that?
Like 1988. It was Public Enemy, Two Live Crew. It was like a big like rap festival thing. I was 16 years old. And it was the Orange Bowl. That was wild. And it was a great time. Tony from the Believers went with me to that one. Yeah,
okay.
It was like nice little group of us went there. And it was wild.
I bet. Did you know at that time that Two Live Crew was like a Miami group?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got into hip hop pretty early on. Yeah. Like when I was 16, 15, I got into that stuff for sure. Not necessarily Two Live Crew, but I was definitely into Public Enemy and you know, Eric B. and Rakim and Big Daddy Kane and the Jungle Brothers and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like, I love that stuff.
The classics.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly the New York stuff like that. The East Coast stuff. I still like all that stuff.
Yeah. The sound was quite different in South Florida. I think it was, you know, more bass electro kind of stuff versus what was happening up north in New York. So you mentioned the Believers. So what do you remember about seeing them for the first time? Where was that? Was that at the Cameo?
I would assume that it would be. I would assume that I probably saw them there first. I don't know how many times they played there or whatever. I don't even remember how I met them. I know that they would come down to shows as a Cameo. Yeah, definitely the three of them, Tony, Dane, and Chad, and Frank, was this big, scary dude who was really nice. He was an awesome guy. And I just got to know them. Ended up being friends. So we were kind of into the same stuff. You know, it's hard to remember how I actually met a lot of those people. We just all met each other. They're a different group too. Like, I wouldn't even calling them a hardcore band. There's so much more. There's so much more than that to me. Like,
yeah,
they were always on a different, in my opinion. Like, they were like, if you remember bands, they were like, you know, standalone bands that they like a genre of their own, like Rebel Assault. Like, to me, that's how the Believers are. Nobody was playing like that. Nobody. They were unique back then, even though they were into a lot of this, they're all into the same stuff, but their band didn't sound like that. And I thought that was great. They were way better than, they're my favorite black local band from back then. Them and Quit, because they were just incredible too.
Would you say that any of these other local bands from that time helped to influence what would eventually become Powerhouse?
No, not really. I mean, at first, you know, we were just playing punk songs. And like when Ivan and I first started doing it, we were playing like, we'd play like Agnostic Front cover and a Fang cover and just punk songs. But 7 Seconds, like we were a fanatic 7 Seconds. Like we loved 7 Seconds. And then I think it was 86 or 87 when 7 Seconds came with Dag Nasty and Youth of Today. And we didn't know who Youth of Today was yet. And Ivan and I had it in our head, we're going to meet Kevin Seconds. We loved, that was our favorite. And a girl who we were friends with, so like the surfer girl, and she had been pen palling with Kevin for years. And so we're waiting around, Ivan and I, we get there early. We're like, we just want to meet him. We just want to meet this guy. And like Sam's like, oh yeah, I'm friends with Kevin. And yeah, sure. When we caught up with him and we took a walk to like some like empty pool and hung out, and Ivan and I was like, yes. And everything was different after that. And then we saw Youth of Today play and we're like, holy shit. Never saw anything like that. So, I mean, guys jumping around the stage like that we had never seen. And then, yeah, when that era of New York hardcore came out, that was it for me. I just wanted to play in that kind of band. You know, I wanted to do, as soon as, you know, like, just that early Revelation stuff. I was like, that's the kind of band I want to have. Or that's, you know, it was just that was what I liked. So I wanted to play in a group like that.
You mentioned Ivan was also a part at this point. Who else was a part of the band to help kind of fill out the group?
There was this guy named Dave who played bass at the very beginning. He was kind of like a skinheady dude. He lived in the neighborhood. He actually lived right across the street from this other kid who got me into punk. And then this guy, Mario, who I went to, actually Larry and I, we went to high school with him. And he was like this long haired, like rock and roll, like metal dude. He still plays a bunch of music. He lives in Atlanta, or in Georgia. I don't know how far if he's in Atlanta. But he was a great drummer even back then. Like, we were all young and he was already like exceptional of a drummer. And we were just friends. And he used to like make fun of like Youth of Today. He like make fun of those bands, but he like still was into it. You know, like he still listened to like speed metal and things like that. And we were lucky enough to get him to play drums for us. He played on that demo and I played everything else. And then, then it changed later on when we got other people.
What year was that demo?
89. Yeah, it wasn't too far apart from when we did the demo and then recorded the record. Like it wasn't like years. It was like maybe the same year. I don't think there was much time in between. So when we made that demo, I went nuts sending it to everybody. because I was writing to everyone all the time. Like, it's going to sound crappy, but I didn't want to live in Miami. You know, I wanted to move to New York. I wanted to be in bands up there. Because there was really no bands kind of like that. Like, there weren't a lot of people into that stuff at the beginning when we first started doing that. There weren't a lot of people. Like, that scene for, like, that kind of hardcore wasn't, there weren't a lot of people doing it. And, of course, you know, I'd look at all those records and all that other stuff, and even California, you know, with Instead and some of those groups, and I'd just be like, man, there's so much going on in those places. I should just go. I just want to go there. I just want to just, you know, you want to be where things are happening, I guess, where I was like, all right, well, I love my friends, and, you know, I got to, you know, I'm stuck here. So, you know, I wasn't one of those people who could just, at 16 years old, move to New York. I wasn't going to do that.
Right. Not that easy.
But I mean, yeah, Ivan and I were both into it. And then eventually, you know, more people got into it. And then, you know, when we actually had the group that was the 7-inch group, we were all into it. You know, Scott and Dan and Andy. And so, yeah, the five of us were really all about it. So,
where'd you guys record the 89 demo?
Same place. It was a place called Natural Sound. And I forget the guy's name who recorded it. Anthony something. He was nice. He had never recorded anything. So, yeah. I don't even know how many groups, like punk rock, punk or hardcore groups he recorded after that. But I think we recorded the 7-inch with him too. Because we just liked him, and he was cheap. You know, he gave us a good deal on it. Like, he was like, I hate this music, but I like you guys, you know, or whatever. Yeah, those recordings weren't great, but whatever. They were good enough.
How'd you guys find that studio? Because there was other studios going on. How'd you find that one?
It wasn't from anybody that I could remember. I might have really looked it up in like a book or something, to be honest with you.
Like the Yellow Pages or something like that?
I found that studio. I guess it had to have been back then, because, I mean, I don't know how else I would have heard about it. Again, I don't know how I stumbled across, because it wasn't even like it was right in the neighborhood either. It was like in South Miami somewhere.
Sure. How many shows would you say Powerhouse played at that point by the time the demo was finished?
Maybe a couple. Not many, because we didn't really have a full group. When I did the demo, I played the bass and the guitar on it. Like, we didn't even have, Mario wasn't really, he like liked playing music and we were all friends, but he didn't want to be a band. You know what I mean? Like, I think he enjoyed playing the stuff because it was different than anything he'd played before. I think he played it really good because he can play fast, because he's just such a good drummer, but he didn't want to be, he wasn't part of the scene. He wasn't part of, you know, it was Ivan and I felt like we were on a desert island. Like, it's like, all right, well, we're lucky we got Mario, we can play. And then very soon after, I think we just started meeting people, you know, into that kind of music. And then we got lucky and people starting more bands and doing more stuff. And there were more members around and people who wanted to play. So yeah, it was just me trying to get a tape and try to send it to everybody, you know, try to sell it, you know, and see if people would like it. I mean, I sold a bunch of them locally too. Like, you know, we, you know, bag, a book bag, walking around shows and selling it.
Sure.
We dubbed them all ourselves, you know, bought bricks of tapes, copied them all ourselves and did that. And then we got lucky that's, you know, that Mike Hartsfield liked it. Because, I mean, I sent a lot of them out. I used to write to everybody. You know, I used to send, buy every fanzine. Like, I used to buy a bunch of demos. Like, I was all about networking out and just trying to meet a bunch of people. Yeah.
Do you remember what zines you were sending that kind of stuff to that stand out in your memory?
Well, John White's Open Your Eyes. That was the first, one of the first people. You've heard people talk about him, right? John White, he used to do shows in Melbourne. He lived here for a bunch of years.
Yeah.
He's a little older, but he's like, that guy's been around and he's super nice. You can never get him on the show. He's an awesome person. I'm still friends with him. He was one of the first like pen pal type people that I was friends with. And his fanzine was cool. Open Your Eyes was cool. Smorgasbord. There was a bunch of other fanzines from, but they were all, that was one called Stop and Think. They were all from California or New York, maybe DC, maybe a couple of them. Because if I saw it in Maximum Rock and Roll or Flipside, a little ad or something, I would be ordering a writing to those people, you know? Yeah, I just wanted to get the tape out. I wanted to actually do something. Like, I wanted to, you know, make a record and go on tour. Like, I wanted to do something. So that was the only way. I was like, because, I mean, back there were no record labels in town at the time. You know, Amel did, like, literally later, like, Amel, when he did that Straight Youth 7-inch, like, that record looked super cool, and his logo was super cool, but I don't know if he would have wanted to. But that was, like, after, but there were no labels. There were no labels, and I wasn't going to start a label, because I didn't know anything about it, not really what I wanted to do. I wanted to play music. So, yeah, we had to, like, fish out to try to get the record made, because no one was doing that here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew that, right? So when you're now going to go from the demo to a 7-inch, you already kind of have a pretty good idea of what you're going to be getting yourself into, right? Because you already know it's likely not going to happen down here in South Florida. We're going to have to shop this somewhere else. So did you have any particular labels in mind that you thought would fit what you were looking to do with the 7-inch?
I mean, back then, you know, the dream was to be on Revelation. That was the dream. But I kind of knew, I didn't think that we would. We didn't really know them. And I, you know, wasn't sure. Like, I sent them the record, you know, I mean, I sent them the tape, but I didn't know any of it, you know, or whatever. And when Mike got the tape and he really liked it, like, we started talking a bunch and we became really good friends. And like, he was cool to talk to. Like, we became friends, you know. I think if there was anyone, do you remember a band called Upfront?
Yes.
Yeah, the bass player from that group, I don't know why his name is escaping for a second, but we used to talk, like, Mike and him and I, and he lived in Connecticut, and Mike and him and I used to talk on the phone all day, you know, because we were all into the same stuff. Yeah, when Mike wanted to do the record, I was really excited about it. When he wanted to make t-shirts and do all that stuff, I was really, really excited about it. Felt really lucky that anybody wanted to do it. That was so cool. Because he even distributed this. He even put out, he took the cassette and even sold a demo too. So I thought that was great.
Did Revelation ever give a reason why they decided to not pick you guys up?
No. never heard from them. Jeff Terranova. That's the guy from
Upfront.
Sorry.
Is that where the New Age Records connection came about?
It could have been from him. I know that we all started talking at around the same time. And I know that they were friends too. But I mean, I think I just sent Mike a cassette. And he just wrote me back and was like, yeah, I like it. You know, and we just started writing to each other. Then we started calling each other on the phone and we just became friends. And just he was really into it. And he liked it a lot. And he wanted to put it out. So yeah, I was really excited about it. Because I mean, he had just kind of started the label too. Like, we're the third record he put. And they weren't all from California either. Like, the first record he put out was from California. The second one was a band from Connecticut. And then he did us. So he wasn't like, you know, like Revelation, they did a couple California records. But for the most part, those first bunch of records were all just New York bands from their, like, the people that they knew.
Yeah.
I forget how long it took before they put out a record of somebody who wasn't from New York, you know, or Connecticut. But yeah, Mike, the first three records were from like three corners of the country. So I don't know why he was doing that, but I guess he just, if he liked something, he did it. And if he liked the people, I guess.
Were they surprised, like, you guys were from South Florida? Because again, it wasn't like there were these, you know, bands coming out of that part of the country sounding like that. So was there any feedback or input that you got that you can remember back then about, hey,
they made fun of us.
Florida? What'd they say?
I forgot, they called us like the third coast of the left. They called us some weird thing. But I mean, I guess back then, I don't know. I don't even know if they were just like, wow, there's a scene down there. Interesting. I was like, it's small, but it's growing. You know, I mean, there was a big scene for shows. There wasn't a lot of bands, but soon, not very long, soon there would be. So, you know, because it was around the same time a bunch of groups were starting to do stuff. You know, with Quit, the Believers, and like a lot of those groups, like they were all starting Cynic. A lot of those groups were starting, you know, wouldn't be long before they were all doing stuff too. Like, you know, they were all three of us, those groups were different from each other. Quit was nothing. We played a bunch of shows together all the time and we were all friends, but we didn't sound anything alike. you know, there were, it took a while before there were any groups. I don't think anyone wanted to play like youth crew style hardcore, really, not at first. But then soon enough, there would be some groups who wanted to do it.
Why do you think that was the case?
I don't know, just because maybe it was new, you know? I mean, and I was just stake out open books and records and buy that stuff. Once we found one thing, we would just start buying that stuff. I'm just trying to think, like, I guess because 7 Seconds didn't have that, they did kind of have that sound, but I don't know, there just weren't groups wanting to sound like that, I guess, down here or down there at the time,
right? You know? What were the crowds like back then in those, in that early formidable period back, you know, between the demo and the 7-inch, what were some of those crowds like?
Not big crowds, you know. I mean, back then everyone kind of used, if there was like at the Cameo, I mean, we played there once. I mean, but like there was just always a million people there, you know. And like for the most part, like if people heard that there was a show and there was nothing else happening that night, like everyone would just kind of go. It took a while before but as far as I know, I don't know what was going on in little pockets of whatever, but as far as when it was like mid-80s, everyone went to the Cameo Theater. That was where all the shows were. There probably, maybe there were backyard shows and some stuff there. I mean, maybe there were, I don't remember. We were all pretty young, you know? I mean, and the stuff that happened before my era there, because there was a scene before that, I just don't know much about it. There was a place called Flynn's. I never went there. I remember going, it was closed up and you could like peek through a broken window and see flyers and see things on the floor. But I never, it was like right, it stopped doing shows like right before I started.
Right.
So I never got to see anyone there. But there was a scene before that, but I don't, none of those bands that I can remember stuck. I never ended up seeing them, never played with any of them. So I don't really know. There might have been those little scenes, but I had no. And then after a while, the scene started, eventually, it started to splinter off into its own little cliques. You know, there were metal shows too back then, but like still at the beginning, everyone kind of played those shows together. I mean, we would play with Cynic and Quit on the same show all the time. But then eventually, yeah, it started getting where little pockets had their own little venues. They weren't really big once it started getting into smaller venues, like, you know, a couple hundred people, maybe. It was still alive. Like, there were certainly people.
When you all got the 7-inch finished, right, what do you remember about that 7-inch? Do you remember, like, where it was recorded? Who helped to kind of work on that?
Well, it was recorded at that same studio. When Mike said he was going to do, like, actual cardboard covers, that was, like, I was super stoked about that because, really, there weren't a lot of records coming out with, like, cardboard covers at the time. It was like, oh my goodness, going to be color and a cardboard cover? Like, that's fucking badass. I designed the cover. I remember Mike designed those early t-shirts, like the ones that everybody kind of knows that everyone you see on eBay or whatever, like he designed those. I think he might have put together the insert, maybe. I don't know. I might have done the whole thing with cutout letters and Xerox copy and stuff like that. I kind of just wanted to make it look like like a youth crew hardcore record. Like that's what I wanted, except I didn't use the collegiate lettering because I don't know why I thought that would look maybe too much like, you know, there you go. But I mean, I was glad that because it wasn't, you know, a million bands then. In that genre, there wasn't a million bands. So in that way, yeah, we were kind of fortunate, like people that got lucky, people liked the record, you know? And it was, yeah, we were lucky for Mike to do that. Like that was a really cool, awesome thing, in my opinion. Like we got lucky, definitely.
Were you handling most of these kinds of duties at putting the artwork together and a lot of the contacts and that sort of thing? Or was there anyone else helping you through that? Or maybe even giving you some guidance on what to do as this could all be very new to someone?
Not really. No, I just figured it out. I mean, it wasn't much to figure out. Just send the tape to everybody that you can. And if you see somebody who's got an address, write to them and tell them, say, hey, what's up? You know, I like the same music as you. I'll buy your demo, you know, whatever. And just, yeah, I mean, I used to love to just meet people, you know, even in Miami and South Florida, like eventually, you'd start seeing somebody with a Bold t-shirt on, you'd be like, what's up, dude? And you start to go over and grab them. We're all hanging out now. You know, like back then, you know, it's like, holy shit, another person who's into, you know, friggin' side by side. All right, get over here. You know, like, you know, because there was not a lot of people into it. You know, so we just I just tried to gravitate everybody together. But yeah, I mean, as far as I think everyone was probably doing the same stuff. I think everybody in bands, whether wherever they were, was just doing the same thing. Try to get a recording and just send it to your favorite record labels and see if they like it. You know, make some t-shirts, make some stickers.
Was there anyone else's style that perhaps you would gravitate more to and trying to not necessarily emulate, but you were looking to that person or other people that approach that you wanted to also incorporate into your style of playing?
I mean, I guess all those groups, like, you know, I like Youth of Today a lot. I like 7 Seconds, but then it wasn't long with 7 Seconds changed their sound right around that. And I loved their, everyone gave them a bunch of crap when they, you know, when New Wind came out on. But that's my favorite 7 Seconds stuff. Like, and I'd tell Kevin that all the time, like, yeah, Praise is my favorite 7 Seconds record. Like, but yeah, Gorilla Biscuits, you know, Side by Side, Chain of Strength. I mean, I loved those groups. You know, I just wanted to be part of that crew, I guess. I mean, it was around the same time. It's just that, you know, those groups were in New York, California, you know. And then, I mean, I was a huge Fugazi fan from the very beginning, you know. But I didn't play music like that as much as I wished I could. And eventually I wanted to do music like that. Like, because, I mean, it changed. Like, that era of me playing that youth crew stuff, that ended kind of early. Like, not long after the record came out, and we started, like, we wrote like one batch of songs after that, and it said they sounded more like Killing Time, or, you know, they were mid-tempo kind of hardcore songs. Like, I was changing at that point. I was already trying to grow. Quicksand came out, and I was like, oh, that's friggin' great. And I wanted to play in a post-hardcore group, like, not long after 1992 93. I wanted to, like, play in like a band like Quicksand, you know. Like, that's the stuff that was getting me, you know, excited not too long after, you know, putting out that record, you know.
Did you guys play any more shows outside of South Florida once the 7-inch came out?
We played once in Tampa with Quicksand. That was like the last show I think we played ever. We played in West Palm Beach.
Where was the show in Tampa?
It was a place called the Wet Paint Factory. Pretty sure that was the spot back then. I don't know what it is now or exactly. It was in Ybor City. I don't think I had ever been there before that, and I didn't go to shows there. Like, you know, remember back then, how we ever found a show out of town and got there without GPS or like, you hear third, you know, like, hey, there's a group, they're going to be playing in Orlando at this place. It's like, well, what are the directions to get there? Like,
right.
The idea that we ever got there.
It's crazy to think. Amazing. Yeah.
It's just amazing to me. Like, wow, somebody actually got a flyer down it for that thing over. Like, how did that happen? You know, did someone mail someone a flyer and say, make copies of this? Like, it's to think about any of that to me is pretty incredible. Like, how we found out about shows for out of town. You know, later on when Larry started doing shows and we started to know the people, I started meeting bands, they were like, oh, we're playing here tomorrow night, you guys should come and see us there. And then we'd find out about that. Or if Larry did the show, like Fugazi played in at the Cameo Theater, and they were like, we're playing Orlando tomorrow night, come up and we'll put you on the list and you come up and see us. And we did. And we did, like, four of us, like, yes, we're going to see him again tomorrow. But as far as, like, finding out about a random show or anything like that, I don't know. Wild to ever think about how we ever found how that ever happened, or how we even would get invited to do any of those shows. Like, right. It just seems like out of the ether how that would happen.
Where did you guys play in Palm Beach?
Because I saw the flyer recently. It was a place called The Pit. I think Awake played that show, and The Roids. It's fun.
Now, The Roids are one of those bands that may have predated some other ones from the South Florida area. Did you know of them back then and get a chance to see them play live?
I saw their name maybe on flyers. I had no idea who they were and had no idea what they sounded like, because I had never seen them, so I didn't have their tape or anything. How would I possibly hear them? Same thing with them Boogalard and some of those groups. Like, oh, it's like I've seen them on flyers. Maybe one day I'll see them, but they're from up there, or maybe we'll get on the same show one day, and maybe they're cool people. But I mean, I knew of other groups, but I didn't hear them all, so I really don't know. I knew of them. I can't remember what they sound like. I mean,
Yeah.
no offense to them, of course, because they played a bunch of shows, and from what I can recall, I mean, I don't have anything negative. Like, I don't have any negative memories, so I'm sure it was cool. I'm sure they were good, because I don't remember thinking anything bad,
What do you remember from Awake?
They are great. That band was great. I actually stayed friends with some of, like, I think online I'm still friends with some of those, a couple of those people. Trevor is right from Awake.
I know of him.
Trevor, he was the bass player. He went on to do really cool things. He was like Sick of It All's manager for a long time. Like, he did a whole bunch of like music industry stuff. He hooked me and my son up when we wanted to go up to New York to go to a show. Like, he did right by us. He's an awesome dude. And they were a great band. Yeah. Like those other bands, yeah, that's around that time. There was Awake and the People's Court. They were good. All those groups were good. And but again, they didn't really sound, they weren't like youth crew hardcore, but they were hardcore groups.
Right.
And I remember thinking they were all good groups,
Outside of those places, did Powerhouse ever make it up anywhere in northern Florida or perhaps on the west coast of the state?
Not that I can remember. I think it was just that Tampa show. And yeah, I think that's it. We didn't play a lot of shows total. I think it could have been 20 altogether. If that. There weren't a lot of shows before we split up. It was, the record came out, we split up in 91. And then I wanted to play other stuff. And finding people who were into what I wanted to play was super difficult, because nobody was really into the stuff that I was into yet, or there just wasn't a lot of people into it in the first place. Or also, like, I'm not a great musician. So, or could I handle it? Could I even do it? I know I wanted to do something like, a post-hardcore group or something like that, but it's like, wow, getting four talented people together to do that, it was hard. Tried to write riffs, tried to do stuff, but it was difficult.
Was that the only reason why the band kind of ended at that point? Was just different creative ideas and what you wanted to pursue? Or were there any other reasons the band decided to kind of call it quits?
No, it wasn't creative differences. Ivan and I, we liked what we liked. I think we just didn't like Powerhouse songs anymore, and we didn't want to change Powerhouse's sound. And we were kind of frustrated because we didn't really know anybody who wanted to do what we wanted to do. Because at that point, Scott had left, and he did that Straight Youth record. He did a bunch of cool stuff like on his own, and Dan left. And Dan ended up, well, Dan ended up doing Cavity, which is friggin' awesome. Like, that's awesome. So they kind of went off and did their thing. And Andy ended up going into Creamy Electric Shadow, which is all really awesome too. And so it was just Ivan and I again, like, all right, we know what we like, and it's kind of weird what we're into. And actually, we kind of did get together with Mario again. He had a little warehouse, and like, Ivan learned how to fundamentally play the bass a little bit. And we there's somewhere there's a really cool rehearsal tape or so that of these riffs that I was like really listening to a lot of like Soulside's Hot Body Grand record. You familiar with it? I love that record. I
Yeah.
wanted to play in a band like that. I wanted to do something like that. Just something different, just progress. Like we left the youth crew thing and started playing more like the like Killing Time, like mid-tempo style hardcore stuff, and then I think it just got old and we just got sick of it. We were really young. You know what I mean? Like, we weren't going on tour because we couldn't afford it. And we didn't have band members. Like, I mean, we were young, and like Scott Baldwin was like younger than us. Like, he was 15. Like, we weren't, we're still in high school. Like, we
Right.
couldn't, and we weren't from money. So it's not like, mommy, buy me a van so we can go on tour. Like, we didn't. At 16, I was working full time. I quit school and worked full time. So, yeah, it was kind of a bummer. So we would just try to like jam and play our stuff, whatever. But the idea of having a group of something we really wanted to do, it seemed like difficult.
So when it was over, You mentioned that you had been working on some other stuff. There could be some rough tape out there of some sort. So did you ever decide after that that you wanted to do another band with Ivan or maybe some other members or anything like that ever come to fruition?
Well, I forgot what happened with Ivan. I think he was going to move. Something ended up happening. And I was friends with Jason at the time too. And then Jason, like beyond reason, had broken up. And when he was putting together like Machine, which actually Ivan and I wanted to call our band Machine because we were Henry Rollins, we were Rollins band nuts, fanatics. And like we wanted to name a band and we flipped through a Henry Rollins book and stopped. And of course, because every other word was Hot Animal Machine was Machine from every other thing Rollins said was Alone and Machine. So it was easy to point in a book and find the word Machine. And I remember Jason going like, "I want to use that name." I was like, "Yeah, sure." Because I at first was going to maybe play with them because he again, Jason was one of those people too who wanted to do something different. And that at that point, Jose too, you know, who was in, like it was Machine basically. I think it was Mike at that time. It was definitely Jose and Jason and maybe Mike, but we still weren't on the same page. Like you remember what Machine ended up sounding like? They're a post-hardcore group. They're really good. But when we first jammed together, like I was into like making noise, like Fugazi feedbacky noise. Like I was really into that. And I remember we all got together in the warehouse and I was just like, I'm just gonna riff, guys. And they all looked at me like I was insane because I just started making noise and doing feedback and making, and they were just like, fuck you, dude. Because they could really play. You know,
Right.
like Jose was a great guitar player. Like those guys were really good. And like, they just ended up like, yeah, this isn't going to work. I was like, that's, you know, and I just supported them and what they did. I was like, I get it. I get it. I'm a weirdo. And like, I want to play weird music. And I get it. You're not into it.
How did you first meet those guys? Like, was it at a show, or what do you remember from your first meetings with some of the guys who were in Machine?
Well, Jason and I were friends from, you know, when they were in Beyond, when he was in Beyond Reason. He was into, you know, youth crew style hardcore, you know? He was one of the people, like, they were into that stuff too. So yeah, of course. Ever all of us who were into Youth of Today and into that stuff, we all liked each other, we're all friends. And Dennis was in like a funk, like that Funkhauser group, and they were really good. I remember going to their warehouse and watching them rehearse and being like, guys, like they're, you know, intimidatingly good musicians. You know, I was never good. You know? Like Jason and like Mike and like Jose, they were good. Like Jose learned, it's funny because you know who Jose is, right? You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
He ended up going on tour with Shelter as their guitar player for a while. That kid picked up a guitar and like 6 months later was just incredible. Like he's just one of those guys. He still makes music now. Yeah, he was just incredible. But yeah, we were all just friends. And Jason wanted to do something progress, you know, wanted to progress into something. It's just a little different than my idea of what I wanted to do. You know, they just didn't like me making noise.
Did you ever find anyone else in the circle who did?
No. And at that time, my personal life started getting weird. And then, well, there was one group. Did you ever hear of a group called 23?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that name.
Yeah, I actually jammed with them. Chris Maul, he was in Postmarks and in Sea Venus. Like, that dude was great. And we were friends. And, he was doing 23 with this. I had to look it up too to see the other guys. This guy Alex and this guy Brian. And Alex owned like a really cool comic book shop in North Miami, and that's the where they would rehearse. And they kind of just wanted someone to play guitar that was coming at it from a different angle, you know, because they were playing like kind of Wall of Noise, like kind of loud, like I guess indie, but you know what they sounded like, right? If you can remember.
Yeah, I can.
And so I started to rehearse with them. And it was a good time because I just did different types of things over their music and it was a lot of fun. But they didn't want to have me, I think they didn't really want to add me to the group. They just wanted to play and do stuff. And I actually played live with them. I want to think that it's two nights in a row at Washington Square, like the week it was closing. I think it was like maybe one of the last shows at Washington Square.
Wow.
So I played live with them. Once, maybe twice, unless my memory is just weird. I could have swear it was a weird thing where we played two nights in a row at the same place. And then I just ended up not really playing with them again or whatever. Nothing bad happened. It was just fun. That was cool. I enjoyed doing that. It was the first time I ever played a 12-string Rickenbacker because they had one. That
And was
was
that your
cool.
first time playing Washington Square as well?
Probably. I don't think I ever played. Powerhouse never played there. Because that they started doing shows what year? It was like 92 or something, right?
Early 90s.
Yeah, well, because we broke up in 91. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think we ever got to play there. We played at the Junkyard. We played at the Rash Can. We played at, like, Club Beirut. We played at a bunch of the other places around there. But I don't think Washington Square was a thing yet. Yeah, so we're not. Oh, that was the only time yet that I got to play there was with them. And then after that, it wasn't too long before some weird, you know, things happened and I dropped out of the scene for a couple of years. I didn't want anything to do with it. So sold a lot of my records.
Did you keep your gear?
Yeah, for a while. I still have the same guitar. That was like the one thing my dad got me. You know, that was like the best gift he ever gave me. It was the, you know, the Strat that I have. I sold the amplifier eventually and then bought another one, then sold it and bought another one. I was never a gearhead and I never like collected guitars. And give me a Marshall 50 watt, like I crank up and just the guitar.
Did you just drop out of playing music and or did you drop out of going to shows and all that as well?
No, I went to shows up through 93 and stuff like that. Like I still went to shows and I still like hung out. And to me, in my opinion, the scene was getting a little weird. And then, you know, then Dylan was going to be born. And the same month that Dylan was born, one of my best friends got killed. And you've heard, I'm sure you probably know the story. I mean, maybe you've heard of he got shot out in front of a show and it was terrible. That fucked me up. And I was like, I'm done with all this. And I dropped out of the whole thing. Like I didn't go, I just wanted to like, I wanted to be like a regular guy. Kind of like, and I got into cycling. I raced mountain bikes. I was like on a team. I was sponsored. I just raced bikes for a couple of years. So I did that. And like, I still listened to some music, but I didn't go to shows. Like I was out of the scene completely. Like didn't really talk to anybody. And that was from 94 to probably 96, late 96. And then I got in the mood to want to listen to some records that I didn't have anymore. So the only person I thought I could call who was just a fun person to be around was Jason. So I called him up out of nowhere and I was like, hey man, I'm in the mood to listen to Judge record. I don't have it anymore. And he's like, fuck yeah. And we hung out and then it didn't take long before he was like, you know, let's go to some shows. You want to hang out? And I just wanted to. I got hurt on the bicycle and I was like starting to get like a little over racing bikes kind of. And I still did it for a while after I started going to shows, but like, and it's weird because I came back. I think the first show that I went back to was like Murphy's Law or something like that, where I was like, oh, back in the 80s when like the Cro-Mags or Murphy's Law played, it was like a scary show. You know what I mean? Like there was going to be a bunch of fights and it was going to be insane or whatever like that. So, I mean, I didn't even know what to think. I didn't know where the scene had gone necessarily. So I went with Jason and I was like, oh man, because back then, you know, you didn't hang out for a long time. Your old friends would be pissed off at you. You know how that is. Stop hanging out, you asshole or whatever. And it was only a couple people that I knew when I went to that show. It was like at the Edge back then. It was a big venue in Broward, I guess, or whatever. And like, there's a couple people that I knew there and that was it. It was all new people. And I was like, all right, this is different. And like the new people were like nice. I thought to me back before that, people sold merch. You probably will remember this transition to it. The only merch at shows was bands selling their stuff in their t-shirts. There was no distros.
Right.
There was no people selling things. There was no stuff. So remember when I came back to shows, I was like, oh, there's people here like selling CDs and selling. It was Amy Fiddler. I remember I was standing at her table and I met her and I was like, she's super nice. I'm like, wow, she's got a bunch of cool records and stuff here. And I was like, okay, the scene has changed. It's cool now. Like it's not as violent anymore. It's a bunch of young people who give a shit. They're doing stuff. And it attracted me. I was like, this is pretty cool. Like there's some, like they kind of got to that next step of it not being just a craziness anymore. It's actually more kind of cool and normal and not so crazy. And I liked that because that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to go to shows anymore because it was just getting to me out of hand.
When you say out of hand, what was those types of things going on at those kinds of shows?
You know, just a lot of fighting and a lot of, you know, violent stuff. And just, I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe it was a bunch of the people that I knew. I don't know. Like, I guess I was just over it. When what happened happened, it was like, I was just like, I don't want anything to do with any of this shit anymore. I was never into any of that. You know what I mean? Like, I had a bunch of friends. We got into some shit sometimes, but like, I was never one of those like tough guy people. Like, I was never, I wanted all of us to be, to like get along with each other. Ivan and I, people, we used to break up a lot of fights, you know, like, and there were some people who got into doing that too, because every venue we would get, somebody would finally let a promoter do a show at the venue, and then there'd be a bunch of fights, and they would say, get out of here. Don't ever, we're not going to ever let you book a show here again. So it got to the point where it's like, man, we need to kind of try to make it where we don't ruin every venue from just destroying everything, people getting into fights all the time. And it was just, that's kind of just what it kind of was. And that, of course, you know, I just was like over it. So I just didn't want to do it anymore. And that was it. And the thing is, too, there was like cool bands at the time, too. Like all my friends, like, were doing, you know, Hangman and Ego Trip and you know, and Beyond Reason at the time. So like, there was stuff happening.
Right.
I don't know why. I just kind of like just didn't want to do it. Just didn't want to do it anymore for a bit. But then when I came back in the scene, I really enjoyed it, you know. And some of those people were still there, but not a lot. It's like, it was like a big changing of the guard. And I'm sure during that time, where I just didn't know it, like, I'm assuming during that time, like, that's when culture started, you know, the band culture and attention, and like some of those groups that started during that 93, 92. And I probably just didn't know it was happening, but it was starting. And then I missed a lot of like those bands' entrances and them playing a ton of shows, the whole Cheers era. Like, I kind of missed that. I saw like the last couple shows at Cheers. Like, I went there maybe four times. There's a whole new scene.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And the thing that really got me, when I met Brethren guys, when I met Javier and Ray and those people, that's it. I hung out with those guys constantly. Like, those dudes were great. Still friends, I guess, with them. But like, yeah, those guys, they just wanted to go bowling and go to the movies and hang out and go to shows. Like, they were like tough kids, but they weren't bullies. Like, they were just fun people to hang out with. And so, yeah, I was just like, yeah, I can hang out with these guys every day. I hung out with Ray like every day.
What'd you think of some of the pits at like a Brethren show? Because they would be quite different than maybe going to see some other hardcore bands play.
I mean, some of that stuff kind of started like, you know, like New York Windmill, like kind of, you know, that kind of moshing. You know, it had been, there was a few people moved down from New York, a few people who earlier on entered the scene and was like, oh, and changed the way everybody danced. Tom Sheridan was one of those people. You might have heard his name before.
Yeah, maybe you know him before. I don't think I know him personally.
Yeah, when he moved down from New York, we were like, him and I became friends really quick because he was into all the same hardcore as me and stuff like that. And that kid was just like, he hit the dance floor and it changed everything. And this other guy named Leo, who like hung out with like a skinhead dudes, but he was from New York, and he kind of, he's two-step and stuff that nobody was really doing, like very few people were doing. So, I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, it's starting then, but then, yeah, when it really got crazy, like, yeah, those shows, mid-90s to late-90s, that was wild. The vibe still wasn't like everyone's just going to fight each other kind of thing. It was just hard dancing, you know? That was it. There were fights at those shows, but it wasn't like, there weren't as many, definitely not as many people who were just fighter-type people,
right?
In my opinion. I'm sure they were there and whatever. Maybe it's just me thinking like, all right, these guys are tough, but they're not aiming to go and fight. They're not like gangy type people who are trying to like fight. You know what I mean? But they dance hard as shit. Definitely. And then, you know, the Coral Springs, like we all started going to those shows. Like I remember all those guys from Hylian and we all hung out. So, I mean, we'd go see Chris Caraba play, we'd go see Newfound Glory play, we'd go see Brethren play, we'd go to all those shows, like we all hung out. Yeah, so that was, yeah, that was cool, and everyone got along really well. I remember, from what I remember, everyone, and that was a kind of a cool era for South Florida, because so many great groups came, you know, so many groups who ended up going and doing such cool things came from that time. So that's really awesome.
You were a little older, right? So did people that you were meeting from this next generation, did anyone ever approach you with memories of maybe their first time hearing the 7-inch from Powerhouse, or maybe they got the demo somewhere? Remember any stories from that, that ever happened?
Yeah, some of them knew. Like, I don't know if everyone knew, but some people knew. I mean, it wasn't a big deal or anything, but like, yeah, there was a couple of people who was like, hey, I'm Tim. And they're like, yeah, I know. But that only happened a couple of times. But yeah, people knew, like they knew what was happening, and they might have been really young. Maybe I just didn't meet them back then, but they were maybe starting to go to shows towards the end of that, or because it wasn't that long after. We think about it now, it seems like an eternity. When you're young, 3 years is like an eternity. The whole world changes. Now it's like 3 years, like nothing, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, people remembered, you know, people remembered. And you knew that I was in Workroom Weapons.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't think I'd ever be in a hardcore. Like, I didn't really even have the desire to be in a band. But when Jason first brought over the tape of that first like EP, which was the demo of it, he did it like in secret. I didn't even know. He just came over and was like, hey, check this out. And he played, and I was like, oh, shit, that's really fucking cool. Like, there's not any groups really playing like that right now. Like, it's a resurgence of the stuff we used to like, that kind of came full circle again. Actually, right before that, now that I think about it, Jason did get together with Mike Mirabelle, who played in Machine, and Addy, who played in Quit. And they tried to put this, and this was kind of before the whole resurgence happened. Like, Jason, they were a little ahead of the curve on it. And they wrote like 5 songs, and they were quite, and it was really fucking good, like really good. And I ended up playing on that because Addy wasn't like, they all played together, and Addy, of course, played the stuff really good. And that was like awesome, but he wasn't into that scene. But Mike and Jason were definitely into like wanting to do that. So when I started hanging out again, of course, they were like, dude, you got to do this. So I had to learn the songs. I played them a little more straightforward than Addy because I can't. And we recorded those songs with no vocals because we never had a vocalist. We tried out vocalists, which was funny.
Anybody from the scene who was known, or were these new people?
Mike Hurley tried out to do vocals for it. And you know how Jason is, right? Like, anything that wasn't like Jason was like, get out of here, that's whatever. Like, he just, you know, because Mike was getting all experimental with it too, Mike Hurley at the time. Because that was, I think, after Tension, maybe? So he was getting into some other things or something like that. And the sound was very Dagnasty. Like Dagnasty, can I say, style stuff. It was really cool. All of that stuff, my SoundCloud has everything. And it has those recordings on it. And it's, I think I have it set so anyone can download it if they want it. So all those recordings are on there, but they have no vocals. And and Scott, who ended up playing guitar and where it was me, Scott, who moved from New Jersey, who was in Backlash. He tried out to sing too, and it just didn't work. And then we just shelved it. You know, like it just went away. And then Jason got together with John and Ryan and did Where Fear and Weapons Meet just out of nowhere. In my opinion, it was out of nowhere because I was hanging out with him at the time. We were friends, but he kind of surprised me with it. And I was just like, this is going to be cool. You know, like, I wonder if I'll ever want to play with this group. You know, I wonder if it'll spark me wanting to play again in hardcore group.
You think maybe that has something to do with perhaps you not getting the invite to play in that band, which because maybe you were kind of taking a break at that point, or was it something?
I don't know. I don't know. I think they maybe didn't need me. Like, I had just started coming back. Like, I don't know if I had expressed any, I don't know if there was a reason why I didn't start that group with them. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe they just were doing it and I just wasn't a part of it, whatever it was. And I wasn't even meant to be. It was when John was really busy doing Eulogy. And then when he started Until the End, he got really into that. And Poison the Well, really awesome. And like that was Ryan's like thing. And he, I mean, you saw where they ended up going. They're still great. So, you know, Ryan's like, all right, I'm going to go do that. And then, of course, you know, Alex and Jason were like, so they found Jesse, who played bass in like a ska group. And then
Double Agents, I think he was in.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's good. And he was fun to hang out with. Like, we became like very, very close friends. We're still friends. We still send each other stuff on Instagram all the time. And Scott. And they wanted to do two guitars. And they hit me up like, let's all do this. Like, join the group. And I was like apprehensive at first. So I was just not confident about it. That was just me in my head. Whatever. Because I was older. But now that I think about it, I wasn't that much. Like, I was only 28 or something. Like, I wasn't that much. I joined that group in 2000. It was like I was 28. It wasn't like, yeah, I was 5, 6, 8, whatever years older than some of the kids, you know, some of the people I was hanging out with or whatever.
Right.
But in reality, I wasn't really old.
But back then you are kind of the older statesman based on how young everyone else is.
Yeah. I mean, but then, you know, when we started rehearsing it, I had a lot of fun. That was a fun experience. And writing the record that we did together, it was great. I love that record. I think it's great.
What was it like coming into a band like that who was already established and you're coming in now? What was that like for you?
It was fine because it was more than half the band was new. It was just Jason and Alex. So, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, and it was Jason. I played with him before. Like, we had already at that point gone back over 10 years as close friends. We were all learning the stuff together. You know, me and the other two, it's like three of us were brand new. So, I mean, it was just like, all right, let's learn these songs. Let's play these shows. Let's have a good time. And then eventually, like, yeah, let's write a record. Let's continue on. Like, you know, we wanted to do the group. Like, you know, we went on, we did some touring. We played a bunch of shows out of state. We did like a 3-week tour. We were into doing it. I don't remember. Well, Alex didn't want to do the group anymore, I think, because he was getting into his career. And he was just, I guess, you know, growing out of it. People do. And the replacement singer, he was good, but it wasn't gelling, I guess. And then that was it.
Was that Larry from Esteem or was that someone else?
No. That was Joe Caro, who was from Milkshed. He was a singer for Milkshed. And he's a good vocalist and he's a good like guitar player. Like he came from like kind of, it's like, guess pop punk, but he liked hardcore. He was certainly into it. There's something about it didn't really work. We threw the whole tour with, you know, together or whatever. But it just didn't seem, I guess, like it was going to keep going, you know. And then, of course, you know, they got back together with their original lineup and they did the thing with Larry and they made the other record or whatever. And I was already out of it again. I had already kind of dropped out of the scene again. Like, I kind of do that where I'll get into it and I'll meet a bunch of people and I'll want to hang out and all this stuff. And then something weird, I'll go, ugh, and I'll run away. And then I'll like go and live on a desert island or in a cave for like a bunch of years. And then I'll be like, I'm out like, hello. Okay. And then I want to hang out again.
Kind of surface.
I don't know if that'll ever happen again at this point. So I'm like, I'm out on that desert island now. I mean, I still talk to a bunch of people, but like I went to a show not too long ago. It was the first show I've been to in years and years and years because this young group was playing that I really wanted to see. And my friend who has Ill Will, go buy their t-shirts. Have you heard of it, Ill Will?
I've heard of the name. I don't know if I've heard of
it. Yeah, Ill Will. That's actually Scott White started that with this guy, Mike Collins, who's an awesome guy. He was doing the show and he had like a market reselling. He does a bunch of really cool, like he bootlegs band shirts, but he always gets their permission to do it. So it's really neat the way he does it because he's a great designer. So you should check out this stuff. And he makes a bunch of interesting just design stuff that he makes. The shirts are just great. And the band that was playing, everyone, go check out Trash World. They're great. And I wanted to see them play too. But that was like the first show I'd been to in forever. And I'm just like, I felt all weird. And it's like, when I first moved here, I went to a bunch of shows. Like I got back involved in the scene. You know, Judge came here, Sick It All. Like, Cro-Mags, like I went to all those shows and I had a good time, but then I just eventually kind of go away again, you know.
What's interesting, going back real quick to when you mentioned about The Weapon and you went on tour, because you never really went on tour with Powerhouse, right? So this was the first time, and especially after that period where you took that break where you weren't doing anything music wise, right? So what did that take for you to go on tour, and where did you all go?
I don't know. It seemed like, I mean, because I had traveled, we like, you know, went out of town to do a couple shows. And then when I was racing bikes, we would go and race in a bunch of other cities. Like we left the state a couple times to do bike races and stuff. I mean, it's just traveling and doing your thing. And so, yeah, it was just like, all right, we got a truck. Let's just go and play up in the Northeast, do those couple shows or whatever it is. And then the tour, that was in the Northeast and it was in the wintertime. So it was really rough. And you remember that band Caught Inside?
Yes.
Caught Inside.
Yeah, Caught
Inside. The singer Andy for that group had a shuttle bus. He owned a shuttle bus. And he actually was our, like, the driver. He, like, we took his truck. And that's what we toured in. And that was a good time. And we played a bunch of really cool shows. Jamie from Hatebreed booked that tour for us. So there was some hiccups and things.
Well, where was the connection? How did you all get involved with him to book it?
It wasn't through me. I think Jason knew him, and Jason, it was through, I don't know if it had anything to do with, like, them being on Revelation or just becoming friends. Like, Jason had already known a bunch of people. All that time, like, Jason, as far as I know, from whatever, Jason was always involved in things that were happening from the very beginning. Like, he never left it. So, I mean, because he, you know, he played drums in Shiloh for a bunch of time. He played, you know, with 108, he played with a bunch of groups. So he met a ton of people. You know what I mean? I think he was even going to be Hatebreed's drummer at one point. So Jason just knew a bunch of people. He was well known and respected as a drummer. Everyone knew him. You know. So that's probably exactly how this, when it came to Where Fairy Webb Is Meet, Jason did all of that. John, I'm sure John did a bunch of stuff because I wasn't in the group when John was in the group. I'm sure John did, because they were on Revelation, because John had the contract with Morning Again and so on and so forth, which still fine. Jason, we always wanted to be on Rev. So that was just for him, a dream come true. I never got to do that. But for him, it was great. You know what I mean? But yeah, other than that, like, Jason still had a lot of contacts and did a lot of that stuff. All of that was Jason.
Did you have a favorite spot on that tour that you just enjoyed playing at? A good crowd and that sort of thing?
That place where Posse Numbers Fest used to be, that place was always fun. The guy who booked the shows there was super cool. We played with Blood for Blood. That was interesting. That was pretty interesting.
What was the crowd?
Met some
like
people.
What was the crowd like for
it was
that?
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy because it was in Maine, and it was like everybody there was like a pro wrestler sized. Weird. And Blood for Blood, I think, had broken up and was playing like a few reunion shows, and that was one of them. So it was crazy jam packed. Everyone was coming out, and it was like, settle your fights here today. It was pretty wild. But it was fun because it was a big show.
Yeah.
I think probably the coolest place that I ever played with them was at Furnace Fest. That was cool. Doing that, it was the first or the second Furnace Fest. That place is fucking cool shit.
Were there other Florida bands that played that same one that you can remember?
I think Destro played it. All Hell Breaks Loose may have played it. Glass Eater may have played it. I think Shiloh, like, everybody played.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody played that. Some of those great groups. A lot of people. At that time, it was just so many groups doing a bunch of stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Didn't Powerhouse have a reunion years later in Churchill?
I forgot about that. Yeah, we did three shows. I think we did four. We did the Churchill thing because that was cool. That was really cool. Did you go to that?
I didn't, but I've seen it on YouTube.
That was really cool. Yeah, Mark put together the Real and Restless Fest with this guy who put out a movie, Evan Jacobs. He made him like a documentary, I guess, or like a thing. Like, and he screened it and did the show. He was like was it three days? And a lot of groups played and had reunions at that. And I actually met people at that I wrote to in the 80s, people who I'd written to, but I never met. You know, Course of Disapproval was there. I mean, Dan O'Mahony, I knew it. We met there. Like, that was really, really cool. The guys who were in Endpoint, who I didn't know, I knew of them. I didn't know that they liked Powerhouse as a group. You know, like, I never really know until someone says something like, oh man, I love that record when I was growing up. Like, especially if they've done some really cool shit, then I'm just like, ah, you didn't give a shit. Come on, you guys are already famous, whatever it is. You know, yeah, that was fun because I met a ton of people and saw a bunch of Believers played that. Like, I saw a bunch of people I hadn't seen in a bunch of years. That was cool. And then we played a show here in Orlando, but we didn't live here yet. And we played Florida Rules Fest that that guy Tom did back then. I mean, the shows were okay. I'm not too happy with them. Like, it was fun to do and see and hang out and see people, but I wasn't necessarily satisfied. I didn't like the way the shows, like, the way we did them. Like, I didn't like the way we performed them. I didn't really like it all that much.
What do you remember about the practice and getting back into that mind frame, that mindset? Because obviously all these years have passed, right? And you're going back to revisit these songs that were, what, 30 years old at this point? You know, how did that...
Were they 30 at that time?
20?
Yeah, a little... There was like, 1990 to 20. It was like 2011, I think, 2012, something like that. So yeah, a little over 20.
Yeah.
But the people who played, like Mike Mirabelle played bass with us. I mean, I knew him. I played music with him. I've rehearsed with him, you know, a long time ago, but like he knew the songs. He always loved the group. So that was fine. And then at first we had that guy Roach playing drums and he was good. I think he played the first show or whatever. And then we had Chris Fiala, who played in, he was a Brethren's drummer. Like he was really good. And he did, I think, the other two shows. And those, to me, kind of went better. And I mean, Mike's a great bass player. So this, you know, he played great. He played great. He knows the songs. So, I mean, it was pretty easy. I mean, we were only doing a handful of the songs. I think we turned one of the songs that we wrote after the record that we never recorded. I think we turned that into an intro song. But it wasn't really a song. Like, it was an intro. But the rest of it is songs everybody knew. It's just a few songs. I would never do it again. Definitely would have to do it again. Some groups can pull that off.
Yeah.
And I can't.
You would say that that was the last that you would possibly see of a powerhouse show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. I'll never do that again. No. I probably will never play again ever. I don't even pick up a guitar. Like, I don't even mess around, which sucks. I probably should. Because when I do, I always come up with some neat riffs and some stuff because I still kind of have, like, my brain. I know what I kind of like. Actually, there's one other thing that happened. After Where Fear and Weapons Meet broke up, because Scott Glazer, who played guitar with me in that group, we were really into the same shit. Like, we were Wicksand fanatics, and we really loved Rival Schools and we really liked Glassjaw. Because when we played, we had never heard of Glassjaw. And we played with them. It was like Shelter, Glassjaw, us, and all Hell's Break Loose, one of the other local groups. And we didn't think Glassjaw was any group. Like, we had no idea who they still weren't big yet. The record, the Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Silence was just coming out. Like, it was just out. And we had just never heard of them. So Scott and I were like, let's go watch this group. And we watched them. We were like, ooh, fucking great. You know, whatever. And then we met them. We became friends with them and like stayed friends with them. And like, we were really into that. But Scott and I played, we got together with, you know who Daryl Bonebreak is?
Yes.
It's Dan Bonebreak's brother. He's a drummer.
Yeah.
He's really good. And Charlie Gleek is a bass player. Great voice, like super cool. And they were kind of into that stuff too. Like, you know, like Charlie was definitely into, you know, like they were into it. So we actually got together and started a group. And I was going to do vocals and Charlie, we were going to do vocals together. And it was going to totally, like, we're finally doing the post-hardcore group that we want to do. And we had, you know, Scott and I, we wrote a bunch of really cool riffs and we played. And somewhere, Daryl might have them, I don't know. I might have had a recording of rehearsals. It was still before cell phones, whatever, so it was still putting a record thing under a pillow and trying to get a good recording for rehearsal's sake. But I think we wrote really cool songs. We had a handful, and I never wrote lyrics for them yet. We were playing with vocals and playing with patterns and stuff, and I think the songs were really cool, but I ruined it because I'm my own biggest critic, and I was insecure about it because both Charlie and Daryl were like, let's play some shows. Like, there were things happening. Like, we could have got on bills. Like, we were all still kind of in it. Like, we kind of, like, people would have maybe been interested to see us play. Oh, those guys are playing together? How about that?
Did you have a name? Did you have a name at all?
We didn't have a name. That's one of the things. Like, I just wasn't ready. But those guys were right. to say, like, let's put it together and just start playing, because all of that can change. That's the whole idea, you know, is you play, change the lyrics, you come up with a name, you do all this stuff, because I think they just wanted to play. Like, and I was like, no, it's not good enough yet, and I'm not ready, and I don't have vocals. I want it to be really special. And because, I mean, to me, it was like, I want this to be the record I always wanted to do from the time I was 19. You know, when I got sick of playing powerhouse songs, like, I wanted to do that. Like, that's the kind of band I wanted to do from when I was 20 years old. And now I'm 30 years old, and I didn't want to screw it up, you know? So I was like really overcritical and like not ready. And I wanted it to be perfect. And of course, when you do that, you fuck it up. And that's what happened with that. Like, I think eventually they were just like, dude, fuck off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they just weren't, I don't remember. I don't know if it was bad, but it wasn't like, I was staying friends with them. Like, but, I don't remember why we just stopped playing. I don't really remember exactly how that happened, whether we just stopped rehearsing, we just kind of drifted out of it. But that was actually that, those songs, I thought they were pretty, I wish I could remember them, but I remember liking them, and we had a bunch of cool parts. And even listening back to those rehearsals, these songs sound really neat. If I could ever get my ass to get it together and stop being like so insecure about it, we might have really had a good time with it, I thought. Because they liked it. I mean, we all liked what we were doing, but it just wasn't polished enough, and I was being a pain in the ass. It's an old story. I guess it happens.
Do you think that was the last chance that you've had since, where you came?
That was the last thing that I did. That was the last thing that I did.
Yeah.
And then the reunion things. Then that was the last. Those were the only times that I played again. But yeah. Yeah, that was the last time that and we didn't ever play live. We just rehearsed, but that was the last time in a band situation that I did anything that was like new.
Right.
With that, I was like 2003.
You ever hear from anybody who you don't know personally that looks you up because they discover that Powerhouse 7-inch, which it kind of solidified the legacy in so many ways of Powerhouse by having that 7-inch released. At least that's my opinion. So do you ever get people who reach out to say, hey, I'm a fan?
Not lately, but yeah. You know, lots of dudes in Europe. There's like a few people in Europe. One guy wanted to bootleg it and re-release it or whatever. I thought like maybe if somebody like, if Mike wanted to do it, like a 12-inch and put the demo on one side and the 7-inch on the other side or something like that. Like, I would say, okay, do it if you want. If you think you'll set, if you think anyone will care, if you think anyone will buy it, then. But yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, because like once in a while, somebody will, you know, somebody who has a huge Instagram account that collects T-shirts will make a post of a bunch of Powerhouse T-shirts, and then you'll see comments and people. Someone will tag me in it, and so that happens once in a while. It's nice. Or someone will post a flyer or something I never saw before. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. That, like, I didn't even know that, like, that different, that second cover for the record. Like, I didn't see that right away. And then at first, when I first saw it, I was like, what's that? Somebody bootlegged the record? That's kind of funny. That's pretty cool or whatever. And then Mike told me what actually happened. Do you know this, what he did?
No, you tell that story.
Okay. So Mike had sent a couple hundred records to some distributor. And that distributor like cratered, and like their warehouse, the roof caved, you know, water got all over the records. And so the covers were destroyed. So he made that alternate cover because he had the records and they were all in fine shape and he could just make a, you know, lyric sheet or whatever again. So he just made an alternate cover for it because it's just, I think, a paper cover. I've never owned one. I'd love to have one because I actually think that that record looks better than the original, even though it's just black and white. Like, I think that thing looks cooler than the original layout does. But yeah, I didn't know that he did that, which it was just, he told me about it, I don't know, 5 years ago. I was on the phone with him and he told me about it. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I wish I had one of those. But yeah, people will post pictures of the record or something like that, and I'll get tagged in it. I think it's cool. Like, or that guy who does that Love Life shirts, where he put out a couple of actual books and he's got like a whole section with all those Powerhouse T-shirts, and I think that's neat.
Yeah,
you know? I think it's super cool. I mean, I was 17, and you know, the fact that anyone likes that record, Yeah, I think that that's really neat, of course. But any, I think anyone would. Anyone would be like, when I think back to it and I read the lyrics and I'm like, wow, I can't believe I was 17 and I wrote songs like that. It's pretty cool. Like, I pretty much feel the same way now, socially or whatever, as the stuff I wrote on the record and everything. So it's really cool. I mean, lyrically, I wrote half those, and I think Ivan wrote half. Yeah, probably half and half. Still, really, yeah, I like all of the lyrical content on that record. I really like, and like, I just wish it was. Of course, everybody wishes every record from back then sounds like shit. Some of them sound like shit, but it's great. Like
Yeah.
that Inside Out 7-inch, it is the most over distorted, crazy, but it sounds so badass. Like some of them sound they're shit, but they sound really good. I don't think the BIOS record sounds good. I think it sounds like shit. But yeah, it could have just been a more raw, good recording. That would have been me.
Your family, what did they think of the music that you did and what you did just on that side of your life?
I mean, my brother, my younger brother, who now is estranged from my mother and I, like he had been to some shows. He went, he saw us play, like, and he hung out a little bit and had some friends in the scene. Like he was, I guess, cool with it, but he didn't really care. I gave my parents a copy of the record, and they were just like, "Okay, great, that's cool." And they were proud, I guess, to a certain extent. Like they were proud. They didn't come to see me play ever. I don't think they ever came to see me play. But they weren't not supportive of it. They liked that I was doing something. So, yeah, they weren't against it.
What about your son? Did he ever discover the 7-inch or the demo?
Yeah, he even when he was little, like his, and to, of course, even to like to this day, like his musical library is crazy, like what's in his head. When he was even a young teen, like, yeah, because, you know, his mom had the record because we didn't live together for a long, you know, whatever, until he was like a teenager. Then they lived with me for a while. But we started, you know, we had a relationship, you know, whatever. And his mom had the record and she, you know, she showed him and all that stuff. And she's really into a ton of music too. Like, she saw a bunch of our shows. Like, she was, you know, she hung out and like, she like knew all the stuff. And she also listens to tons of different music, you know, tons and tons. So he, and then in the age of the internet, you know, I mean, he showed me so much stuff that I never heard, you know, even, and he knew so many of the things that to me I thought were obscure that people, he already knew it. Yeah, his depth of music knowledge like that is bananas. Like, always was. Like, I was always blown away by how much he knew about, you know. And so then, definitely, when like I started talking to people like that, bands like he liked, and like he got to speak to some people. Like and stuff, like when we went to New York, like we went to a Black and Blue Fest together, and like it was just cool because we were able, I was, you know, seeing people. He was like, "That record's fucking great." Like it was really neat. You know what I mean? Yeah, we went and saw like Rival Schools, and I like knew those guys, and like to introduce, like, and he loved Gorilla Biscuits. He was like all about it, and he was 15, 16. So yeah, that was really cool that I was able to, that I was lucky that those people remembered me at all. And then super lucky that they were super cool and that Dylan got to see that stuff because that was really great.
Well, it's been great getting a chance to have you on, to tell your story, to go back through some of the memories that you've had over the years from playing shows, going to shows, the different people that have come in and out of your life, those that you may still be in touch with, perhaps those that you may not. But a lot of things have happened in your life, and it's great to get a chance to hear you share that with the listeners and telling your story, Tim. And it's just been a real pleasure having you on. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to join your collection. That's really cool. I hope I was interesting enough for anyone to get to this point in it. You know, yeah, it's really nice to have a conversation. I've done a couple of things like this, not many, so it's nice to be considered. It's fun. I appreciate it, definitely. So thanks. You can end up with just such a huge library of cool talks, man. That's awesome.
Good to have you as a part of that and part of that archive, and certainly the legacy of Powerhouse and what you've done, you know, not just musically, but the fact that, you know, you were a part of that scene and what have you, and really contributed a great deal. It's a real honor to have you on. So as we kind of close things out, any final last comments or remarks you wanted to share before we wrap things up today?
Go vegan. Don't vote Democrat or Republican. help the unhoused in your neighborhood. Listen to Trash World. They're on Spotify. And like, again, if anybody feels that they want to say hi to me, I mean, I'm really easy to find and reach. I'm on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, and Minecraft. So, I mean, that's fine. But, yeah, hope everyone enjoyed listening to me talk shit.